This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to The Morning Run. 6 o'clock on Thursday, the 17th of November. Thanks for starting your day with us. I'm Melissa Idris and I've got Julian Ng here with me.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jules. It's a wet, rainy Thursday morning. I don't know about you, when I woke up, it was starting to storm, so you could hear the thunder.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, man, I have to get up now.
Me too. When I woke up, I just felt like I didn't want to wake up.
Yeah. But I do love rainy mornings. Maybe not on weekday mornings, but generally when you can go back to bed and snuggle under the covers.
Yeah, it's a distraction to be to when you wake up and have it raining.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice to sleep.
It's that
go
one,
on sleeping.
One extra challenge to getting out of bed. But thank you for staying with us this morning, for being with us this morning, and hopefully staying with us until 10 o'clock, because we've got a great show lined up for you. At 8 o'clock, we've got the Breakfast Grill, where Ibrahim Sani will be speaking to Adam Brimo, founder and CEO of Open Learning. So what they are is essentially an online learning platform, and they're helping digitize education here in Malaysia. They're working with the Ministry of Higher Education and other local universities to put the curriculum online.
I think this is such a great source of hope for the future, because as we know, education is becoming so expensive, and I guess it's the top of concerns in parents' minds around Malaysia. So I'm very hopeful and optimistic as well about the future because of these so-called MOOCs, right? Mm-hmm. The massive open online courses. It gives a lot of hope to me.
Well, you know, The people who support MOOCs, the MOOC, I'm just going to spell it out, MOOCs, people who support MOOCs say that it democratizes education. But then when they look at data, they see that the dropout rate for those people who participate in open online courses tend to be very high. So, you know, you start off and then the dropout rate is really significant, and then only a few end up finishing the course. What I learned, I think it was just earlier this week, I learned that there's something called MCOC, customized open learning. And it was really quite interesting, because that kind of goes back to the idea that MOOCs democratizes education, but now it's kind of customed again to the individual learner. That doesn't jive in my head somehow.
Yeah, I think the poor numbers you're referring to, Melissa, is because it's still the early days for online education. And, you know, it's also contributed in no small part by some of us, at least, going online and registering for linguistics and computer coding and what have you, and then dropping out a few weeks later because we have so much on our plate in terms of work. But for students, the natural cause of action is that parents will gravitate towards a kind of physical university education right now, even though it's so expensive.
Right.
But in the future, I think this may be the only alternative if education cost continues to skyrocket and we have no other choice. Sending our children to a MOOC course would be the only choice.
Yeah, because then you're not limited to getting a slot in the university, getting a space in the university. A degree can happen at any point in time in your life, and, you know, from anywhere, right? You don't have to physically be in the university. Really interesting. But the question is whether Malaysia is ready for the mass adoption of MOOCs. That's a question we're going to be posing. Adam Brimo, founder and CEO of Open Learning. 8 o'clock on the Breakfast Grill. And after the grill, on Current Affairs this morning at 8:35 a.m, we take a look at what we can expect from the Bursa rally on Saturday. Now, quite an interesting topic, because it seems to be something that is part of water cooler conversation this past week, whether the build-up to this year's rally has really been quite muted, and if Bursa rallies are even still relevant anymore.
Well, I think conceptually is still extremely relevant, because the kind of changes it tries to achieve, reformation of the electoral system, I think that's so important, and that's still lacking. But, you know, it is the fifth birthday after all.
So do you feel it too this year, that there's a slight lackluster atmosphere leading up to it?
I think so. I think people have done it already. If I can say that there is a lack of novelty factor, not that it's the most important thing, you know, but sometimes the novelty. I remember the last birthday, for example, some people who traditionally did not attend birthday, like the older folks and you know the more urban people, started going to birthday, and that gave them a sense of belonging as far as birthday is concerned, you know, and there was a novelty factor for them right now. But all of us, a lot of people have now gone to birthday. But, you know, the turnout on Saturday may actually surprise.
Well, I wonder whether there's a certain element of fatigue that has set in. And I really want to ask James Nyagam, the former Human Rights Commissioner at Sohakam, about this, because James has been an independent observer of almost all the birthday rallies, including some other peaceful gatherings as well. So I'd like to get his sense of whether people feel a sense of fatigue because what has been the outcome of the past four birthday rallies, and whether, you know, they think that the fifth birthday rally may not even achieve anything. I have to say, yesterday I was having a conversation with someone and we were talking about this, and this lady gave me the most quintessential Malaysian answer when I asked her, are you going to birthday this weekend? And she said, I want to, but I think raining season, so it could rain. And I was thinking, oh, that's a really great Malaysian answer.
This is where that idiom, you know, rain or shine, rings through, right?
That's right. Okay, so 8:35 a.m. on Current Affairs. A look at what we can expect from the birthday rally on Saturday. But later in the show at 9:35 a.m. every Thursday, we have Ringgit and Sense. And on the show this week, Eric Chin, the CEO of the private credit reporting agency CTOS Data Systems, will be joining us on the show.
So CTOS has been around for a long time. It was established in 1990, so older than many of us here.
not that old.
not me, but I'm a lot older than CTOS, actually. But we're going to find out why a personal credit scoring system is important and how it works. You know, okay, what goes into your personal credit scoring system. And this is coming at a time when we have a lot of debts as well. And how does that affect our financial future?
You know, this is coming at a really timely point, like you said, Jules. And for me personally, I feel like it resonates a little bit. So CTOS, is it like the FICO score in the US?
I think so.
Okay,
I think so.
All right. Because you hear of the FICO score. I've never personally lived in the US, so I don't know how it works. But you hear it a lot cited in movies and pop culture. And when I think about my own personal credit rating, so sometimes I think, oh, okay, they've got FICO in the US. But here in Malaysia, do I have a credit rating? Because I don't know what my credit rating is. And when does it come into play, right? Do banks secretly know my credit rating without me knowing? Oh, they do.
Yes, they do. Actually, everyone would have a kind of credit rating. The only question is whether it's a good or bad credit rating, right?
And so are we going to be talking about what makes for a bad credit rating?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all the factors that would affect your credit scoring. And this is very important because you might be letting a bad credit rating from some small loans affect your application for some other more important loan, like a housing loan, right? Mm. So you want to know how to game this thing so that you can apply for the more important loans and not have your future being jeopardized by this kind of thing.
Well, since we're having Eric Chin from CTOS on the show, Jules, let's put it out to people who have questions about credit worthiness and what goes into a personal credit scoring. Send your questions to 016-201-9000, or you can email us at ringgit@bfm.my or tweet us at BFM Radio. Make sure you catch the show at 9:35 a.m. to hear your questions being answered by the CEO of CTOS. Okay, it's coming up to 10 minutes past 6 o'clock. Let's take a quick look at the news. Of course, Donald Trump still making headlines. The US president-elect has defended his handling of the transition to the White House amid reports of disarray in his team. Now, I believe he, fired a couple of people. I think a former House Intelligence Committee chairman, Mike Rogers, abruptly left a couple of days ago. And now the names have started to leak, Jules, people that Donald Trump is considering to be part of his inner circle. He's considering Texas Senator Ted Cruz to serve as the U.S. Attorney General.
Wasn't this the guy who who competed against him for the nomination?
Exactly.
So this is an interesting development, appointing some of the rivals, something that Barack Obama has done as well in appointing Hillary Clinton to become Secretary of State. So very interesting. And the other controversial figure is also he replaced New Jersey Governor Christie mm-hmm. with another of his members who supported him during the campaign, Mike Pence, who is his VP.
Exactly. Rudy Giuliani, the former New York mayor, is also now leading contender for secretary in state. I mean, what foreign policy experience does Rudy Giuliani have?
But well, he can argue that if you've ever been to New York, it's like the United Nations there.
It's cosmopolitan.
Many people of many nationalities there. But you're right, you know, that is a relevant question. Mm.
But one more thing also that's being asked, he's also considering this Wall Street veteran guy called Steve Mnuchin. I don't really know much about him, but apparently he's being considered for Treasury Secretary and also the billionaire Wilbur Ross for Commerce Secretary. Now, it's quite interesting, Jules, because he's kind of tapping into his Wall Street buddy pool for key positions in government. And that worries me, because how do you then reconcile someone who has business interests with someone who's making policy for the country?
He also accused Hillary Clinton of cozying up with the Wall Street type. So by doing this himself, it's really the pot calling the kettle black. Also, I think we spoke about this yesterday in asking the question of whether these Wall Street people can manage the economy, because I feel that their mind is always geared towards profitability, commercial viability. And when you run an economy, it's not always about that, because you also have to think about social programs and things that don't make you any money.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. But then I remember having this conversation with, I think it was Uma from the Evening Edition, and he said, well, sometimes you have to run a country like a company, because that's the only way you can, you know, companies, good, well-run companies are efficient, right? So why not run a country that way? And again, we came to the conclusion that a country is so much more than profitability, right? You want to take care of your citizens.
Yeah, even when you talk about inefficiency, for example, if the government's role is to ensure full employment of the economy, it invariably leads to hiring inefficient people when the time calls for it. So it can't be always sticking to ideals of efficiency when you have to keep full employment. It doesn't always work that way, I think. And I think that's why I think financial people are so far removed from the reality of the situation. The environment is the other thing, right? Mm. Environment, like environmentally harmful industries like oil and coal, and sometimes they may be very profitable, but look at what it's done to our earth.
The consequences. Right?
We have reached a point of no return, apparently, for climate change. And this is the kind of thing that is driven by business people, thoughts of business people. It makes a lot of money, but it harms some other thing. How do you deal with them? I don't think that financial people are equipped to deal with that kind of questions.
Well, speaking about Wall Street, some news here that the parent company of the messaging app Snapchat has reportedly filed to list on the US stock market. So based on investments so far, Snap will be worth between $20 to $30 billion, and that will make Snap the third most valuable technology company at the time of its market debut. Even more so just after, I think, Alibaba and Facebook.
Yeah, 20 to 30 billion, certainly a lot of money, but only a fraction of those two companies that you mentioned, Melissa. Also, I think, interestingly, half of the value of Uber, which is unlisted at this point in time. Right?
Goodness me, I was really surprised to read this, because I always thought Snap or Snapchat was a faddish thing, you know. So I wonder, what is the longevity of a product or a proposition by Snap?
I really like the fact that it's there, because it does provide an alternative to things like Facebook and WeChat and what's the other one that we use? WhatsApp, right? Who can forget that? WhatsApp.
Right.
You know, so the fact that this thing still exists and is thriving – I really like that.
Okay.
This is the instant messaging service that disappears, right?
Yes, I believe so. It's the one with the filters and all sorts of other things. I've never personally used it, but if you have you are a big user of Snapchat, tell us about it. Whether you think that it's really worth the $30 billion valuation that it's said to have. We're going to be back with more news after this. So stay with us on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. 6:21 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng. That was Drive by the Cars. Now, if you're driving in your car and it's raining where you are, because it's raining where we are, just be safe, drive safely, and hopefully the roads don't get too congested later in the morning because of the morning rain. But good morning and stay with us. We'll keep you company even if you are stuck in traffic. We've got a story from you from CNBC. It was an interview done by self-made millionaire Grant Cardone. So apparently this is a really quite a colourful character. He's now gone on to be a motivational speaker, but he touts himself to be a self-made millionaire, reaching his first million when he was 30, even though he was deep in debt and addicted to drugs. So now he's giving some financial advice on CNBC, saying that if he could give his younger self one piece of advice, it would be to skip buying a house. He bought a house when he was 30, and he says, well, looking back, I would never buy one. What do you think about that, Jules?
Well, you know, buying property, there is one big problem about that, which is that it saddles you with debt. And it's something that ties you down for decades, and it's very hard to get out of it. And it really influences the kind of decisions you will make simply because you own a property. For example, if you had a job that you hated, you would not be able to leave that job because you just had to service the loans of the property, right? So there are, I think, pros and cons of it. The pros is that the biggest advantage of buying a property, drum roll, is also debt, right? So
debt. I wish I did the drum roll.
Because it allows you to buy something that is extremely expensive that you wouldn't be able to go to your ATM, withdraw some money and plonk down cash to buy a property. Usually, if you bought a very big ticket item like this, you will get the facility of a loan. And that is the biggest advantage because 20, 30 years later, the appreciating asset, that is the property, would allow you to have established a fantastic nest egg, a fantastic asset, which you otherwise would not have been able to do without that debt.
Okay, but this guy, this self-made millionaire Grant Cardone, is saying, unless you have the cash to buy a house in the bank, then you have no business buying a house. So he's saying, don't take a loan to buy a house.
Yeah, I disagree with that. And I think that there isn't enough data in Malaysia to show that property appreciation is quite stable over the years, over the decades. I remember my mom buying a place in a PJ suburb 30, 40 years ago. For what at the time seemed to be, it was very expensive for her at that particular time. But now when we look back, that price was, I think, 30,000 ringgit for a terrace house in PJ, right? Mm. And today that place, the property is worth $1 million. Now, would you have established that kind of asset ownership without that debt, right? But that is such a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
I think we can use it to our advantage, but it can also kill us.
Yeah, because I wonder whether we cherry pick the good stories, the success stories. You know, we hear stories of people buying property in Bangsar for like 20,000 and years later, when their kids are all grown up, they've sold it for a couple of million, right? But what about the stories that you don't hear, where someone's sunk in so much money and debt into this property that turns out to be a dud and they can't get it off their bags?
Yeah, a lot of people engage in property speculation. I think if you use debt to buy a property property that you live in is just like paying rental, except that you own your property.
Right.
And you get a lot more flexibility when you live in a home that you own. You don't have to think about being under the watchful eyes of your landlord.
Yes.
And they could actually ask for the property. I think in Malaysia, the rental culture is not as strong as, let's say, the United States, where a lot of people rent. So then the culture there will allow you to live in the place almost like it's yours.
What do you mean? What kind of culture are you talking about?
I'm talking about the rental culture,
okay.
Right?
So that means more people rent in the UK and therefore they have kind of a good relationship? I don't know.
No, I think over here, we usually... I've heard enough stories about people having to move out of the place because the landlord is asking for it back for whatever reason, right? Because they want to sell the place or because they want to live in it now. So there is a degree of uncertainty in renting a property, and you can't renovate it, which Malaysians love.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I rent in a place, and one of the things that's in my tenancy agreement is that I can't make any changes to the house or to kind of knock any nails into the wall. So all my photos and art, that's just kind of laying flat against the wall on the floor. And when I look at it, it makes me quite sad. So I think that's a very strong argument. To be able to hang your art on the wall is a very strong argument to buy your own place.
Yeah. And also in Malaysia, I think the reality of the situation is that people don't have enough money to even buy a property on loan.
Mm.
Even if they get loans, they won't be able to afford to service that loan. So in those circumstances, rental would be a very attractive and viable option. And it shouldn't be something of an idea that stigmatizes. It's okay to rent, I think. And there is this other story here, Melissa, that if you can't afford to rent or buy, there are these other options right now. There is this concept in London where there is this latest generation of people trying out co-living. Have you heard of co-living?
Oh, yeah, I have heard of co-living, and it just came by chance, actually. When you were talking about the rent culture in London, it reminded me of that, because rent in London is getting so astronomical that people just can't afford to rent anymore unless you have roommates or someone else to split the rent check with. But it's so expensive that the younger generation, the millennials, are now looking at co-living, where essentially it's like a fancy hostel, right? So you have a fully furnished room with ensuite, with a small kitchenette perhaps, but then communal areas, so where you can watch TV together, read or what have you. And I was wondering,
hostel living for adults.
Yes, yes.
I don't know whether I can get used to that.
Glamorized hostel living, right?
Because I really want my privacy. I guess when you want that, you go back to your little room and be away from people.
Yeah, but still.
But, you know, it's a really great idea. I wonder why it has taken so long for someone to come up with this idea, because we already have co-working spaces, right?
True.
It's only one step away from that. The other point that I noticed, the other insight from this article is that when you say that property prices have gone sky high in London, it is at the same time saying that, hey, property is actually good investment,
right?
Because it has become so expensive. So it's really contradicting the advice of the other guy that you were talking about. I think he is more concerned about short-term cash flows, which is a very real problem for many people today.
Yeah, I don't know about this co-living. I understand.
I don't know. I think it's not for me.
I think it's a certain type of person, a certain generation perhaps.
For sure.
Yeah, but well, good that London has it. It really looks quite fancy. We'll tweet out the link. It's a very kind of really fancy.
Sounds like Party Central.
Yes, I thought that was the first thing that crossed my mind. Okay, we're going to pass the party on to Keith Kum now with the News Bulletin on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Pour Some Sugar On Me by Def Leppard, the name of the song, not a request by Melissa. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng. I've got Kusi Chuang here in the studio with us now. We want to say thank you to Roland Tan for wishing us a good morning on Twitter. Good morning, Roland. Drive safe on the rainy roads if it's raining where you are. But earlier, before the 6:30 news bulletin, we were talking about how there's advice now from several millionaires. Well, this one specific millionaire rehashing old advice that he, in his opinion, you shouldn't buy property unless you have the cash sloshing around in your bank account. And that led us to thinking about, well, perhaps renting is the new way to go. It is for the younger generation in London, where they're now opting to co-live. So co-living is a huge thing there now.
Don't talk about Julian like that, Melissa.
He's a self-made millionaire.
What do you mean? Oh, no, far from it.
Who discourages people from buying property?
Well,
now that's someone I wouldn't co-live with. You see, this is the problem.
Well, there's another story that caught our attention about property. Now, some property developers are trying to stand out from their competition to say that rather than just offering the usual amenities like gym and communal areas, they're now thinking about offering educational opportunities, classes as part of amenities. So to provide some space for, say, a cooking class or an art class.
Private art class.
Imagine that.
The one that caught my attention was improv comedy classes.
Man,
I would attend that. I think you're good. You're going to be good at that one.
Wait, you would attend that? I would opt not to buy that property because of the class.
What, you don't like improv comedy?
No.
Well, anything to watch Julian on stage trying to tell jokes and trying to incite laughter would be quite interesting.
Do you know what improv is? It's so hard.
It's so difficult.
It's so hard. You have to be quick on your feet and constantly saying...
I think you guys would be good at it.
I don't even want to attempt
it. I think Sharad just needs to stand there and
I think so. I think Sharad would excel at improv. The other kind of classes that they... that kind of ritzy classes that property developers are now offering also include things like child authors. So you can get your child to learn book writing classes.
Amazing. Actually,
really?
Yeah, actually, yeah, amazing. Because it's all about the USP, isn't it? It's all about making your facility stand out from the others. And just in Malaysia, I shouldn't say the developer's name because obviously it would be free advertising for them. two syllables. No, So one particular developer in Setapa, I think, that they've introduced an indoor stadium with a full-size Olympic swimming pool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, with a track and field track, essentially. They can do all kinds of things.
Small one, right? I hope a small one, not like Bukit Jalil or anything.
No,
like that.
Actually, I'm not sure because it's not been built
like
yet.
A gladiator.
But that's not.
Now, that's something you want, right, Melissa?
Yes, I'd buy a house.
Sherrod in a loincloth. But
please, no. No, no.
But yeah, so that it's all about the US space. So they've positioned it like a health and wellness thing. You can go there and do your laps in an Olympic sized swimming pool. Then there's another one in Country Head, Stubborn Sara, which is offering saltwater spas, and you can do your gym in the saltwater thing.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I think it's another level.
This wellness and gym type facilities are really overdone. I think when you go to condos, they are so underused. And it's such a big white elephant that raises the cost of the condo, right? But these things, admittedly, these are very atas places, you know, like Ritz-Carlton residences.
So this in the US, they're quite atas, and talking about these kinds of classes that perhaps very catered to very, it's very first world, upper east side kind of people. But for Malaysia, just coming onto your point, Chuang, about how property developers are now trying to stand out by, they think that, okay, so we, you know, by catering to a tech-savvy generation. I remember talking to one property developer on The Breakfast Grill where he talked about now having your guards be able to... You can order groceries online and then your grocery list will go to your security guard and they can accept those groceries for you and concierge or a butler.
They can even buy you a ticket. Like I interviewed somebody on a property show in a very classy development, no names mentioned again because we don't want to give out free commercials, but you can even there was this incident of a person buying a latte coffee for his girlfriend in Korea, arriving at exactly the time that she went into work. And this guy was living in Malaysia. So all he did was pick up the phone and ask the concierge, can you do this for me?
Well, that's really atas. Like,
no, but,
it's very atas, yeah.
Wow.
But that's a service that property developers or, you know, property managers are now starting to provide. Yeah. And I remember telling the guests on the Breakfast Grill, thinking, well, to be completely honest, I don't know whether I want my building management to know what's on my grocery list. You know, they might judge me for all the junk food that's on there. But
well, you know, when you watch American movies and you've always got the, you know, the bellhop downstairs. And
yeah.
Then he or she sees, well, he usually with a top hat, he sees, you know, the kind of people that you bring home late at night. Do you mean? And then you can,
and then you
watch
your
too
guests.
Much too
oh,
many movies.
Oh, Mr. Koo and a different one tonight, is it?
Oh my god. Oh my
Stop
goodness.
Fantasizing.
Yeah, well, yeah. And then I woke up. But
yeah.
No, I think this is just about making better use of the space that condos have because of all the empty gyms in a condo, right? And I think it's really a creative way to use that space.
It is, but you see, because I'm from Penang and and because these facilities, they cost money. So the more facilities you load and labourise it, you end up paying more. So the thing is, as you get older, you want to reduce your cost of living. So this is going back to the investment thing that you and Melissa are talking about, right? So you want to reduce your cost of living. You want to reduce your regular costs. And the truth with condominiums is that management fees go up every 2 or 3 years and they keep on going up ad infinitum.
What about if you translated that logic to, say, a hotel, right? Cost per square foot. So let's say, you know, you're paying for the fancy square footage of the lobby or the chandelier, the crystal chandelier. Would you be happy to walk into just a desk? And then, you know...
Well, there are hotel business models that are catered to that kind of idea. Well,
they're called... Tune hotels.
No, not necessarily.
No frills.
Like,
no frills.
I think some of these no frills branding of 5-star hotels have been extremely successful as well. Like, I don't know, a DoubleTree and Traders Hotel. Traders is the no frills arm of Shangri-La Hotel, right? And DoubleTree of Hilton. They have done very well. I think those kind of ideas do work. But, you know, in Hong Kong, a reminder of Hong Kong, right? And you know that in Hong Kong, this is a place where property is so extremely expensive. Every little inch counts. So if you wanted a lobby in Hong Kong, you actually pay for that.
Yeah.
It goes into the price
it's
of
priced
your
property.
So in the Hong Kong condos, when you get out of the lift going into your apartment, it's no bigger than your 5-foot way because they don't want to pay for a lobby which they can't live in.
Yeah, yeah, what's the point of a big, big fancy lobby, to be completely honest with you?
Well, exactly. A friend of mine who's got two kids, who's very senior in HSBC, he has this apartment, swanky apartment. It's not even swanky, it's quite old, right? He has bits of piping sticking out. You pay something like 30,000 ringgit a month for this 2,000 plus square foot place in the middle of Hong Kong, right in the CBD. He can walk to school, office, you know?
Yeah. Speaking about things that are overpriced, apparently Nike's new self-lacing hyper-adapt sneaker could cost you around $720. Chuang, you saw this story and you thought, cha-ching?
No, I just thought to myself, you know, people who buy the best equipment, it doesn't matter what badminton racket they have, doesn't matter what shoe you got on your foot, doesn't matter what car you drive, if you don't have the engine or the talent or the discipline to go and work out, it doesn't matter, man, what equipment you have.
Chuang, I don't think anyone buying this $700 shoe is going to be working out. So essentially,
it's about showing off.
You put it in and then you kind of tap your foot. I don't know how it works, but the laces kind of tighten by themselves. It's like Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future.
So
the novelty of it.
It's people who buy Range Rovers and pay 1.2 million ringgit and then they never go off-road because, you know what I mean? Because they just got a pavilion or something. And then show off.
Roll up and let the valley have his keys.
Yeah. He's bought a new laser.
You could achieve the same thing with loafers, right? I use loafers in the morning. I'm so short of time because I wake up late and then just stumble into work. You know, so there is the whole technology and thought process behind how to get you to work with as little time as possible. One of it is not having to choose your outfit, you know, just wear
uniform.
Uniform dressing, right? And the other one is not having to wear shoes that you have to tie up the laces. So, you know, wear loafers, which are nowhere near the $720 that Nike is charging.
Jules, Nike's going, oh my God, wish we thought of that rather than doing the self-lacing thing. Okay, 10 minutes up to news at the top of the hour. Stay with us because we've got the Beatles coming up next with Good Day Sunshine, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.